This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning. Tune is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeart Radio, YouTube TV, Sirius XM Channel 158. However you're taking it, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin on this Thursday morning when football resumes.
Let's go, man. Next 5 days.
Oh, so great. College tonight, college tomorrow. 2-3-1, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the pros. It don't get no better than this, I believe is what old Milwaukee Beer used to say.
I mean, I don't think any shocker to anybody who listens to this show, but I've been so wrapped up like in the NFL and like getting prepped for that. Like it kind of hit me last night where it's like, hey, that Miami game's tomorrow.
Yes, it
like,
is.
That is great.
On the show today to discuss Miami and Ole Miss tonight, and of course Indiana and Oregon tomorrow, Tim Murray, a VSiN College Football Betting Podcast host, VSiN College Football Tailgate host, VSiN Primetime host, not necessarily in that order. He'll join us later this hour. And Chris Felica, is that correct that Chris Felica will be here today?
Yep.
The Bear from Fox Sports to discuss his alma mater, Miami. Get his thoughts on the game tonight and tomorrow night. And I don't know, maybe we'll get more than just college football out of either of them. Are we sure? A little later on, estamos seguros? Question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Upside down question mark at the beginning, right side up question mark at the end.
See.
Unscripted with Bill Krakenberger, of course. Crackman Unscripted. It is a Thursday after all. Perhaps I should have led with that. Oh, and one other thing. On the heels of Aaron Schatz yesterday, you know who's on the show today? You know who's making a brief appearance
Love
on the
it.
Show today?
Love it.
Cleve T.A., baby. One of the great NFL Twitter follows. Cleve will be here to discuss Wildcard Weekend and his thoughts on the awards. We'll try to jam all that into one segment.
I would say, unquestionably, one of my favorite people that we got to show up, that showed up during yes. the summer, and I got to finally meet in person.
I did too.
Right?
He was here.
It was your first time meeting him
first
in person,
meeting
too.
Him in
so,
person.
Yeah, it was great to talk to him in person. Great to have him back on the show.
The mysterious TA.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're looking forward to that as well. Real quick, before we get to Miami and Ole Miss, any thoughts of that, now that the Trae Young trade has happened? Do you have anything to add to that about that? Trae Young to the Wizards.
It's all very interesting to me. It is. I don't know. There's a little bit in my back of my mind that it's a shame it got to this point. I think with Trae and the Hawks, I think what they were trying to build, around him and with him, it kind of sucks. It got this way, but we knew you kind of knew this was likely going to happen when they didn't offer them in the extension over the summer. It was okay. Trae, you're on thin ice. They start designing the rest of this team with better defense and okay, you're become the weak link. Where do you fit in? And just clearly it didn't. At the beginning of the season, it just wasn't going to work. It was time for them to split. And look, I think it's kind of a sad trade at the end of the day, right? Like the Wizards get someone who's going to fill some seats a little bit, I guess.
10 extra seats.
And Atlanta all this really means for Atlanta is you're jump-starting a year of the expiring contract of CJ McCollum. You're going to get a year ahead of than what you were going to get out of Trae Young, who will opt into his player option this summer because he's not going to get that kind of money elsewhere.
Yeah. Sad is a great word to use here, because if you took the Luka trade to the Lakers as the pinnacle of the world going in a frenzy, the mm-hmm. basketball world going in a frenzy, this is the opposite of that. Right? This is like, I don't know if anybody even batted an eye at this trade.
And for two guys that will forever be linked from the draft.
Trae and Luka.
Yeah, Trae and Luka.
Great point.
Yeah.
Who were traded on draft day. That's absolutely right. I hadn't thought about that.
Don't worry, the executive who decided on Trae is with Washington right now. So, he's got all that going.
It makes perfect sense for Atlanta, right? They figured, he was a deficiency on defense. They've been playing this way for years. It more than made up for it incrementally by his presence on offense. What did that get them? That got them a 43-win season, right?
Mm-hmm.
1 year they got to the conference finals,
yeah.
Right? But they'd never been able to match that. And so then they finally made the assessment this year, well, we can be a 43-win team actually without Trae now.
Right.
And so that's why they were willing to let him go, and then they're going to try to get Anthony Davis, I guess, from a Washington standpoint, which is where I'm, of course, amused by. And yes, let me just preface it by saying it is impossible for me to talk about this without immediately getting angry, right, about the fact that they traded Avdija, and now you're trying to gin up excitement about getting Trae Young. Sorry, I can't. I just can't. But there's no On the other hand, is there any harm in trying to go from sucking to middling? I guess not. Trae Young doesn't make anyone around him better, quite frankly. But the interesting thing about this, I'll sort of wrap it up with this. The interesting thing about this is, did Washington make this trade based on their recent surge of success? In other words, they've won, all of a sudden they've won some ball games. Did they all of a sudden toggle to, oh, okay, maybe this is our moment to go from sucking to try to make something, to start, right? This has to be a start.
Trae
Young is not the answer. Has to be a start to something. And so that I think in that respect, it's interesting, because if they had not had that surge of games, would they have even done this?
I don't know that that matters. I think just looking at the roster overall, where maybe they believe, right? I think I'll say it's kind of like throwing fuel on the fire, right? If you've got a little fire that's growing that you think you've got something with pieces on the team, younger pieces, add a guy like Trae Young, it's going to accelerate where your offense is at a year from now completely. But it's, you know, the Wizards, the Nets, the Jazz, like, you've hit the point where you have to start building somewhere. Some of this has to start going somewhere. So I don't know if Trae Young's the answer for that or not. The last thing I'll say on is with the on the Atlanta side, I said this last week, I think, and I stand by it. Like, with what they got in return, I think this team is set up now better for regular season success. I don't know if that translates to the playoffs. So I think a guy like Trae Young will be missed by this team in the playoffs.
You brought up the Jazz in there. Oklahoma City needs a buzzer beater from SGA last night to beat him in overtime.
Were you watching that?
No, I did not.
Theater. I mean, like, the fact that that went to overtime, you're like, no way is this going to happen again. No way.
Yeah.
And then SGA just put the team on his back.
I'm just going to say it again, because I said it earlier in the week, did a whole thing on it. They got to figure out something long term for load management on this guy.
Yep.
Because this is, I really don't. I think people are assuming they're like a four championship team. And I think this is not the way, they're not going to get anywhere close to that the way that they're dealing with this. Anyway.
And if it gets any worse, it's interesting if it brings up more conversations before we get to the trade deadline. Right? Like, this is a team that we all just said, no, they're good. Like, they're not going to do anything. They got all these assets, but they're built for the future and built for now. Why would you do anything?
All right, college football tonight. Miami, Ole Miss, National Semi, the Fiesta Bowl in Arizona. We will have Chris Velika on a little later. Tim Murray talking about this, of course, giving their thoughts on the game. I am on Miami. Two bets I made again earlier this week. I'm on Miami. -2.5. I actually bought it down to 2.5 earlier this week.
Good on you.
And then I also have Indiana tomorrow. I got the worst of it with Indiana. I actually got, you know, laid 4. I have Indiana to win the title, but I do think Indiana is the best team in the country. I think Miami's the second best team. And if you look at Miami's season, they're only 2 losses, Kelly, by 3 and 6 points, I believe it was, respectively, to Louisville and SMU. The Louisville game, they turned the ball over 4 times. It was a -3 turnover differential, including the game-clinching pick from Carson Beck. And then the SMU game, which they lost by 6, which is a lot of what people sort of lean on that game. They almost had the ball for 38 minutes, Miami. They committed 12 penalties in that game. They had a tremendous... The officiating in that game was such that anything that could have gone against Ole Miss, the flag was either kept in the pocket or was picked up off the field. It was just a very anti-called game. I'm not saying it was deliberate, but I'm just saying the way that the cookie crumbled in that game, it was all against the Canes. And those are their only 2 blemishes on the season. That's it. And since then, and now in the college football playoff, they have just, you know, behind Bain and Messidor to start with, but then Moton also, and all these guys have just been amazing. They've held A&M to 3 points. They've held Ohio State to 14. Do I think they'll hold Ole Miss to 14? No. Ole Miss's offense is obviously more dynamic. I think their offensive line is better than those two. But in the end, I have to be on the Canes here. Not that the Canes offense is setting the world on fire either, but ultimately, do I feel like you lean on Fletcher, you grind it out on offense against a middling Ole Miss defense? Do I trust, what unit do I trust the most out there? It's the Miami defense. I like the Canes. I'd even lay the 3. I like them to advance to the finals tonight.
Yeah, I joined you as well, finally, last night. I don't know, I sat there, what was it, 2.5 we were talking on Monday, or I'm sorry, on Monday it was 2.5 at like 120. I don't know why I didn't like that, Gil, and I waited for 3-120, but I'm in, laid the 3 with Miami.
The other drama, of course, the big drama surrounding this game, And at, you know, to what extent it matters, I don't know. We'll all kind of find out together. And then even if we find out, I'm not sure we can necessarily draw a perfect line to it. Right. Yeah. It's not a quantifiable thing. But the Lane Kiffin stuff is just, it just gets more ridiculous. What an insecure small man he must be, if I may just be so blunt. You remember how it went down. He clearly wanted to go to LSU. Remember, that was after throwing the administration there at Ole Miss under the bus. Remember, he's like, I wanted to stay here. They just wouldn't let me. Right. That was his first PR move on the whole thing, which was nonsense. Then as he goes, he says, if you coaches don't get on the plane right now, you can't come with me to Ole Miss. He did that whole routine. Jimbo Fisher chimed in on this now, too. Then, according to Jimbo, and I agree with Jimbo, Jimbo said he thinks Lane figured that Ole Miss would lose to Georgia. So when the PR backlash came about him saying, get on the plane, you can't be a coach with me here at LSU. When the PR backlash occurred, then Kiffin relented, right, for some of the coaches to stay behind. Jimbo Fisher says he probably thought they were going to lose to Georgia. And now after Ole Miss beats Georgia, Joe Cox, their tight ends coach and co-offensive coordinator, has to go back to LSU. Lane's like, nope, you got to come here again. George McDonald, their wide receivers coach and passing game coordinator, Lane's like, nope, you got to come over here to LSU. So now Ole Miss is down. So they were allowed, they were not allowed to have the coaches. They were allowed to have the coaches. And now Lane is pulling back some more of the coaches, which is just ridiculous. The only coaches that remain now are Charlie Weiss Jr., their offensive coordinator, and running backs coach Kevin Smith. Those are the only two now, the Ole Miss brass, we're allowed. Now, it begs the question, if Ole Miss wins this game, does Lane then go, oh, I got to get those two back?
Probably.
Like, it's insane.
It has to matter, right? It has to matter.
It has to at some point. Tim Murray and Felica chiming in on this coming up on A Numbers Game at Beeson. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Beeson Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Beeson Pro.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now you can check out Greg Peterson's college basketball best bets, Steve Mackinnon's college football playoff semifinals best bets, and the Daily Racing Forum's horse racing picks for Santa Anita. Later today you can check out Tyler Shoemaker's men and women's college projections, Zachary Cohen's NBA best bets, and Jonathan Davis's NHL picks and props. You get full VSiN Pro access for as little as $9.99 for your first 30 days. See all the options at vsin.com/subscribe. Kelly hands me a rundown every day. It's always interesting to see some of your notes.
Notes from the night before always in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, do we go to them every day? No, not really. Sometimes we do.
Great to have for a fallback.
Great as a fallback. Yep. But one of the notes that Kelly has on here is Thunder get a scare, but avoid dropping their seventh game in the last 13 as they beat the Jazz in overtime. And I just thought about it. It's like, if you had gone to the future, brought this back to us 2 weeks ago and I had read that line, I'd be like, what are you talking about? This cannot possibly
he would have said someone screwed this up.
The 24-1 Oklahoma City Thunder, by the way, Avdija with 41 last night, two shy of his career high.
Let's go, Denny.
The last thing about the Wizards on that, they better hope Corey Kispert, and I'm not saying he will,
oh yeah,
but they better hope Corey Kispert doesn't become like a poor man's Avdija. Right. That's the other thing about
all
this.
All of a sudden does turn into that amazing 3-point shooter that they were hoping.
It's like, oh no.
I will say I did run my only bet tonight. I'll squeeze it in quick. Only bet of the association tonight is Mavericks. This is not a team that I've been very high on, Gil, but oh boy, the Jazz after that overtime game in Oklahoma City have to go back to Salt Lake City tonight and get ready for the Dallas Mavericks, who have been sitting it away. And that is a bad, bad spot for old the Utah Jazz.
It's a bad spot.
Bad spot.
Matt Brown loves spots.
Big spot.
He loves betting spots.
Yep.
Okay. Let's look at some NFL markets. We'll crescendo to the third one, because the third one fascinates
Matt Brown's greatest blow-up ever, by the way.
Like, his greatest primetime action blow-up.
Getting angry about anything to that level.
I guess Kelly went to a sandwich spot or one of those terms, a flat spot or whatever, one of those terms one too many times for Matt's liking, and he just went ballistic on, what are all these spots?
Yeah, look ahead, sandwich spot.
Sandwich. Let down. Wild card weekend, highest scoring team, lowest scoring team. We'll do that first. This ought to correlate, right, with what team totals are in the market. It ought to. Does it exactly? Not exactly. And so, therefore, the idea for me here is you should... Does your handicapping matter? Of course. If you have conviction, it should always matter. But the very first thing you should do with this kind of stuff, to me, is just be aware of where the discrepancy is, right? And so in this, if you go to team totals here, by the way, highest scoring team wildcard weekend, the Rams are the short shot at plus 350. That makes sense. If you do the team totals, the Rams are like 28.5-ish in their game against Carolina.
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. Bills, by the way, being second, makes sense as well at plus 450. They're at like 26.5-ish, 1-point favorites over the Jaguars currently, right? So that makes sense. Where it gets a little weirder, or not exactly a direct line, is after that, where I would argue the best value just based on the number. Forget, get your handicapping to the side for a second. The Jaguars at 6-1 is probably the best number on that board, because the Jaguars, again, current win total, team total, pardon me, current team total, 25.5-ish, right? That area. So that's the best number in this category. Now, your handicapping should then follow up. Once you know that, right, then your handicapping should follow. Maybe you think, hey, maybe that corroborates your conviction. I think the Jaguars are going to beat the Bills. All the more reason for me to want to bet the Jags at 6-1. Was there anything there for you that you liked better?
A perfect breakdown. I absolutely think if you're going to look at these markets, it's how you need to start it. That jumped out to me. I have one book pulled up right now. Jags, Eagles, Patriots, all 24.5 on the team total. What's the difference, though? Jags are minus 135 to that over, and both the others are juiced to the under.
Another,
so you said 25.5, yep. You know, same sort of thing, right? There's a clear edge, though, in the Jags compared to where the Eagles and Patriots numbers are. And frankly, Gil, like, you and I are on the Jags already. I think the Bills have major defensive issues.
Yep.
This is one I'm going to shop around for.
If
I can get 7-1, 8-1, I know I'm getting a little greedy now, but
it's a kind of nice looking bet. 6-1.
I hear you. And it's a fun one for a wild card weekend. You get all these, it is nice having this many games, I think, because at least you have markets like this that aren't just down to six teams, you know, eight teams, whatever.
It's the perfect number of games. Right. This many games and not too many to, you know, make it ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the one that jumped off the page to me. I don't know if there's any others you want to talk through.
I want to go to the third one most, so I want to leave time for that.
Rams are rightful favorite,
yes.
Right? Like, rightful favorite, and no, I'm not going to be shocked if they put up 42 on the Carolina Panthers. The other one that kind of jumped out to me is just, if you really like the Niners this week, I mean, like, if the Niners are going to win this week, they're going to put up points. I don't think this is a defensive battle that they're squeezing out over the Philadelphia Eagles. So, like, I don't hate that as a little kind of sprinkle if you are on the Niners.
If you are on the Niners, right? Lowest scoring team, right? You just invert that, where in this case, the lowest scoring team, the Steelers and the Panthers are both going to be at plus 350. They're the short shots. That makes sense. Both of their team totals is right around 18 in their respective games against the Texans and the Rams, the bookend games, if you will. And then the other teams follow suit. Texans, still a low totaled game, right? It's 6-1 right there.
Yeah.
You know, it should be the exact opposite of what you see in the first category, and then just rinse and repeat. The third one here that I want to look at here, Kelly, is really the one that is the most interesting.
I also don't like, do you have anything you'd want to bet here?
No.
I mean, like, no. It'd be Panthers and hold my nose, and like, that's not something I'm looking to get.
That's
into.
True. It's a tough bet to live through.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially if you bet something like, what if you bet one of the early games and you're like, oh, cool, they only put up 10 points. You got to live through the rest of the games. Great.
Super Bowl matchup combined seeds. Now, again, we're just out of the interest of being thorough, right? All these markets exist. This one's at DraftKings. Super Bowl matchup combined seeds. Now, remember, there's actual other books. I don't think does DraftKings have Super Bowl matchups? I'm not sure they do.
They do.
Okay. So DraftKings also, in addition, within the same book, but also other books have Super Bowl matchups, meaning, Rams versus Broncos, Jaguars versus Seahawks, whatever you want to like pair two teams to actually make the Super Bowls, you get longer odds on that. But if you just wanted to do it by the number, Super Bowl matchup combined seeds. So this is let's do it in reverse order. I think your handicapping is like the third level of this, your actual conviction on teams. Your second level of handicapping ought to be, well, let me figure out all what the pricing is of all the different combinations that would end up being six, meaning a four versus a two, a five versus a one, or a three versus a three,
yeah,
that end up in the Super Bowl for the six, where six is the short shot at plus 425. If you could throw up the chart there, people will understand it better visually. So four versus two, five versus ones ends up being a six combined seeds plus 425. So your third level is your handicapping. Your second level is just figuring out if all those combinations, the individual combinations that end up at six, mathematically correspond to plus 425. So you'd have to do some math there. But the very first level of this, Kelly, before you get to any of that, is just knowing how many different combinations there are for all of these, right? Just the simplest level is this. Six, right? I just mentioned it. Three versus three, two four versus twos, mm-hmm, and two five versus ones. So there's five different combinations that can get you to six.
I love this conversation, by the way, because this is like craps or Super Bowl squares.
It's exactly,
right?
Like craps. This is like, it's exactly like craps. That's what craps leaps to mind with dice, right? So seven, right? Combined seeds of seven, you end up with six different combinations, right? Three fours, five twos, six ones. The eights have the most. There are seven different combinations that can get you to eight. So, and you have to do this for every number, right? Whereas four, there's only three combos, and two, there's obviously only one combo, a one seed versus a one seed. Threes, there's only two combos, right? Two versus, mm-hmm, one, one versus two. So you have to know that stuff at the very basic level, then before you assess the math, then the third level of throwing your handicapping into it. So just in a real life situation, if you are a Rams believer, let's say you're a Rams believer, the Rams are a five seed. You have to realize that if you like the Rams, six is definitely not a number you want to bet then, because your only combination with the Rams is to face the Broncos, the AFC one, and you might as well just bet a Rams-Broncos straight matchup in that case. You'll get exponentially better of a bang for your buck.
Right.
So I think that's what makes this kind of market, on the one hand, very interesting. On the other hand, kind of not really the most bettable, although maybe you can talk yourself into one of the ones with lots of combos.
Well, I think it's the conversation has to start with the Rams, right? The,
yes,
the Rams are influencing pricing on this. Like if you were gonna ask, is this, would six be the short shot most years? No, it's because the Rams are a five seed and they're second on the futures board.
Right, but simultaneously then it locks you into only that one matchup with the Rams.
Right,
that's
right.
The problem. So take the eight, right? The eight, the falling on eight as the most combinations, right? Seven different combos. You're getting a four versus a four. Nah, that's unlikely, right? Panthers aren't playing the Steelers. But you're getting a 5-3. I don't know. People have Rams. People like the Texans. People like the Jags.
Yeah.
People like the Eagles. You're getting the 6-2s. You're getting the 7-1s. I don't know. So it's just an interesting multi-layered mathematical thing to assess. You may or may not find it something you'd like to actually pull the trigger
you'll
on.
You'll probably end up in the matchup market.
You'll probably, that's exactly right. You'll probably determine, maybe the individual matchups are better. Let's come back. Cleve TA on the NFL next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, don't forget to check out the sharp plays on Match Transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info and alerts directly from the pros. Scan the QR code for more. We invite you to check them out. sharpplays.com. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside. This gentleman is one of our favorites. We love him. And you couldn't tell that we love him because it's been too long since we've had him on the show. Hopefully we can have him on not only today, but also get him on the Megapod next week, schedule permitting. He is one of the best. He gets uncomfortable when I say this, but he really is one of the best NFL follows there is on, mm-hmm, Twitter, at Cleve TA, C-L-E-V-T-A. TA joins us now from somewhere in the Cleveland area, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, man?
I'm good, guys. How are you? Can't believe we're heading to the playoffs. It's been an interesting season, and the playoffs will be really interesting. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Well, before we get into this, your wild card thoughts, your wild card weekend thoughts, let's talk about what we just talked about briefly off air. You had a great season, but in one way and not the other. Explain.
Yeah. So from a personal kind of betting perspective, I hit probably nearly 60% from sides and totals. But when it comes to, you know, things like Circa Millions, I was just below 500 for the year and just never gained ground, gained traction. And I think it's a combination of, you know, played a little bit too much game theory, like tried to take some stale lines in the contests, didn't actually bet those, but put them in the contest, and a lot of those lost. And then a bunch of other times, I bet early in the week. Usually I'm a Monday, Tuesday guy when it comes to sides, especially. Those lines move so much by the time you get to the contest lines, I don't even put them in my card. And, you know, because the number moved too much and don't think there's value anymore. And, you know, those end up hitting personally, but, you know, I don't include them in my card. So it was just kind of an odd season in that regard. But, you know, I guess if I'm going to win one or the other, I'll take my personal wagers
yes.
With real money instead of
standings. Absolutely. If you had to pick one of them. All right, let's do wildcard weekend. Let's start with what you like best, side or total.
Yeah, so I...
Oh, right as we got to the good part, we lost Cleve. Yep. Oh, that was going to be exciting.
Well, I agree.
Whatever he said, whatever he was about to say, I completely agree. We got cut off right there. He was drifting there at the end there. I was wondering what was going to happen.
Yeah, so. We'll get him back on.
By the way, we have some breaking news in the meantime while we get him. Boy, actually, oh boy, it has happened. Adam Schefter reporting that the Dolphins have fired head coach Mike McDaniel. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross met with McDaniel this week to discuss the season. After that meeting and reflection, Ross decided to move on. Wow. This was one of those where earlier in the season, we thought he could be the first coach fired.
Mm-hmm.
But then, not sadly, but good for him, the Dolphins turned it around, quote unquote, right? Turned it around enough where they didn't stink anymore. And you thought maybe Mike McDaniel survives this, but apparently not. Not apparently, evidently not. Dunzo.
Felt like he was, it felt like he was safe by the end of the season. As soon as the season ends and he didn't get fired immediately, it felt like he was even safer, Gil. You know, the first thought I had when Danny texted this over, fair or unfair? Is this John Harbaugh immediately related? Like, is this immediately linked to John Harbaugh?
I don't know.
Like, they would have stuck around with McDaniel for another year if John didn't show up on the market.
Everybody's speculating that about everything, right? People are speculating, it's remember how yesterday we were talking about Harbaugh's agent said, seven teams have already contacted us within 45 minutes and there was only six vacancies. And everybody was saying, like, who was the team that still has a coach? Maybe it's Buffalo. If they lose, that Sean McDermott will be gone and that they will go after John Harbaugh. So everybody's speculating the John Harbaugh thing. But there you go. There's a seventh vacancy now as a fifth coach is let go from the end of the regular season till now. Remember, with the Giants and Titans having interim positions, those are the two extra ones. So seven, we are now one shy of a quarter of the league having a head coaching vacancy. We also know that Todd Bowles is staying per Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay. There will not be a move in Tampa Bay for those who speculated there might be there.
Offensive coordinator out, though. Jonathan Grizzard, that came down this morning.
Yeah.
He is gone.
Did you see that? So I did the whole when the Commanders got rid of the two coordinators, Kingsbury and Witt Jr., the other day, and I did the whole thing about it, instant reaction to it, and saying, you know, Kingsbury should have never lost his job. We had some reportage yesterday from was it Jordan Schultz who put this out yesterday? Like, yeah, apparently Dan Quinn reports were he didn't want to let go of either of the two of them. So it was clearly it's him or them situation in Washington, too. So maybe it's sort of similar to that in Tampa Bay. But there's the latest. Dolphins firing head coach Mike McDaniel out. And Mike McDaniel was always one of those guys, Kelly, through the years where I said about him, you know, nerdy-ish, quirky-ish guy, right? He doesn't fit the central casting Dan Campbell football coach sort of thing where it's like a tough guy, big guy. He was the opposite of that. And that works when you win. And I always said that as soon as things go bad for a guy like that, it tends to go bad quicker because you don't fit that central casting mode of whatever folks think an NFL coach should look like. So that's the latest out of there. We get tweets of beating the book. NCI 95. When is Cleve on? Well, he was just on for a couple minutes. We'll effort getting him back on. We'll see if that works. This is from, let's see, Mike Gazill's Duke 90. Les Boulets, talk about the Bullets. Tony Kornheiser's term for the Bullets, the Washington Bullets back in the 90s when he wrote for the Washington Post. He says they're cursed. Denny, two silent letters. Avdija only averaged double figures once in 4 years, so they traded him for a guy from Baltimore named Bub.
then Denny gets George Michael frosted tips and averages 16.9 a game. Yes, 41 last night. We do have Cleve back. Cleve will do the truncated version of this. Your favorite wild card bet this weekend is what?
Sorry about that. I pulled my microphone out by accident. Yeah, I like the Chargers. 3.5.
Me too.
I think I make this number just south of a 3. I just think that you've got a Patriots team, as good as they played this year, just, you know, we know about their schedule. But if you look at some of the quarterbacks they faced, go ahead and run through those. It's actually incredible. Two games versus Josh Allen, a half a game against Lamar, and that's it. Like, Baker Mayfield maybe is the next best quarterback they face. So have not been tested at all. They faced six teams I consider with a pulse between the Bills twice, the Steelers, the Falcons maybe, Tampa, and Baltimore, and they've won one game amongst those. They went 3-3 ATS, won one game by more than 4 points. Like, they just haven't done anything to me from a perspective of facing good teams, facing good quarterbacks. That really scares me. I think, you know, Herbert's probably the second best quarterback they faced all year. And the thing with the Chargers is they're obviously poor on the offensive line, but the Patriots are one of the worst from an adjusted pass rush standpoint in the league. So not really worried about that from that perspective. Got a really good coach, obviously, in Harbaugh. Got a really good defense that limits explosive plays, which we know Drake May loves. Number one in the NFL in explosive pass plays. They're fourth in limiting explosive passes. So, you know, I just think it's from a matchup perspective, getting north of 3 points here, especially with a quarterback playing his first playoff game against a veteran like Herbert. I do think, you know, that stuff does matter in the wild card round. So give me the Chargers here.
I'm with you. There's lots of other reasons to and we showed your snaps against backup quarterbacks and 30th number 30 ranked EPA and worse. We put up that chart. Patriots have faced the most snaps, 69%, I believe it was. Against that 61%. There's the Cleve chart that we showed earlier in the week. This is just great, great chart from you. This is awesome. So there's that at the top. Also, to your point about rookie quarterback, people wondering, is that really a thing? Favorites with a quarterback making his first playoff start, 7-20-1 against the spread as favorites. Wow. Against the team with a quarterback with playoff experience. Okay, in the last couple minutes we have here, TA, let me just leave it open-ended to you about awards. What are you the most passionate about? Who do you think in whatever category ought to win? What's the one you're most passionate about?
I don't know about most passionate. I mean, I had a Tyler Shuck ticket at 250-1. I tweeted about mid-November, so that's long gone. I did hedge out with Tet McMillan, so I'm okay there. I made some money I'm happy with. I don't know. I think, you know, I'm a Drake May stan, I guess, from an MVP standpoint, but I understand the Stafford people. I don't like the Lifetime Achievement Award, but, you know, is what it is. It got a lot of friends in the media. I think the Coach of the Year is fascinating. I think Liam Cohen is getting completely shortchanged. I mean, like, the improvement that they've made both offensively and defensively. Look what he's done with Trevor Lawrence. It's been incredible. I mean, this is a top five offense right now. Mm-hmm. And people were talking about running Lawrence out of town last year. And just, you know, I think Vrabel's, you know, excellent coach, but that's clearly a schedule plus Drake May to me that is really causing them to, you know, to get the number two seed. I think Cohen has been more impactful and more hands-on with a guy like Lawrence. And, you know, Ben Johnson's great. And Mike McDonald's excellent. Like, I had him last year, him and O'Connell, heading into last year. So I was probably a year too early. But, you know, that defense was already really good. I mean, it was a top 10 defense heading into the season. So as great as they've been and playing in a tough division like that, I just think that Liam Cohen's just been a notch above the rest. I think there's value there. I don't know if he'll win it, but I do think he deserves it slightly above those other guys.
Yeah, it's going to be a totally splintered vote, I think. So who knows? Maybe a Cohen, maybe a Ben Johnson. Who knows? But Liam Cohen, absolutely deserving, as are so many of these guys. TA, I hope it works out. We get you on the Megapod next week, man. Sorry about the truncated version today. Appreciate your time.
That's my fault. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Cleve TA on Twitter, by the way. CLEVTA. And you can check him out, all his stuff, at CleveAnalytics.com as well. We'll come back. Tim Murray on the college football semis beginning tonight on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. That's too bad, man. that we had the issue with Cleve. He will be on the Megapod next week, though. So it's Drew Densing today on the wildcard version of the Megapod. Cleve TA on the divisional round version of the Beating the Book Megapod next week. So we look forward to that for more more from Cleve. We got shortchanged. This is from Ace DiCardano on Twitter. The most interesting part of the Trey Young trade for me is that Trey Johnson is no longer blocked by CJ McCollum. Yes. He says, imagine the Trey and Trey 80s poster. It's so true. It's so true. The cheesy 80s poster. What were the bullets? Were the thunder and lightning? That was their whole ad campaign at that time. Posters. That was our big form of entertainment.
Oh, man. Posters.
Oh, posters.
So many on the walls as a kid. Come on, man.
Farrah Fawcett. Jason H11. Sorry. You lost me for a second. Already bet Jags highest scoring team plus 780. Jason H11 says Trevor Lawrence most yards plus 1040. Josh Jacobs most rushing yards plus 690. FanDuel has a daily boost going on those markets. Poke therapy. Anything from Dr. Bob on tonight's game? Yeah, he always does analysis for every game, but as far as a bet is concerned, no. He says his numbers too close to market both on side and total, so nothing on anything in tonight's game between Miami and Ole Miss. But you know who might have some thoughts? Tim Murray might have some thoughts. He's the host of VEASAN Primetime. He's the host of the College Football Betting Podcast. He's also host of the College Football Tailgate Show. And he joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at one. That's the number one, Tim Murray, with his royal wave that he just did for us right there. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, can you feel the excitement in the nation's capital with Trey Young coming to town?
It's palpable.
Gil.
Uh-oh.
Woo, man. I mean, I've just been getting calls. I mean, this puppy has not rang once or gotten one text from anyone that I tried
to make this point the other day when this first came up. I'm like, people don't understand. You have to find Wizards fans first to actually get their reaction to this. They don't exist.
It might be a little harsh. And maybe this is a off-season topic, not the day of, you know, the college football playoff. I think the Wizards are a top five most irrelevant sports franchise.
I brought this up. Oh, yeah. This is what I said. You're doing my bit. I said the other day, I go, I know this is going to spark some sports talk radio. The word I used was not irrelevant. The word I used was inconsequential. Same thing, right? Like it's just.
They just kind of live. Yeah. They live in like that mediocrity land. Kelly knows more so than we do, but like. They're just like, 30 and 52. They just kind of live in that random land of they're not going to be the Thunder and tank and then be the best team in the NBA. They're just, hey, man, we had that year where they made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals in game 7 against the Celtics. Never forget, Gil.
It's just so sad.
Hashtag never forget.
It's gotten so sad to this point where it's just like they keep like, it's like they, it's so insulting to the fans, right? It's like, as long as we get one semi big name, like it will bring enough people and then who cares?
They had their name. Denny Avdia. Let me not get into it. By the way, last thing before we get to Miami and Ole Miss, Mike McDaniel just got fired. He used to, of course, the famous 2013 Washington Redskins photo with all the coaches, right? Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, Raheem Morris, Mike McDaniel. I mean, they were all there. OC, you were saying off air, you think?
Sure. I mean, I told you, I don't think they should have fired Cliff Kingsbury. I thought that was an odd choice.
I said the same.
By Dan Quinn. It's not his fault that Jaden Daniels was hurt. Terry McLaurin was hurt. The offensive line was awful. But if Mike McDaniel's interest of coming to the nation's capital where he once coached and the owner is gone and he believes in Jaden Daniels, absolutely. Yeah, I would. I think they'll have to get in line. I think Mike McDaniel will be a very hot commodity from the offensive coordinating route. But yeah, for Washington, I think if you're going to fire Cliff Kingsbury, I think Mike McDaniel is a very, very good replacement.
Absolutely. I would agree. All right. Fiesta Bowl tonight, Miami, Ole Miss, Canes, 3.5. We're showing 3.5, 52.5. There are threes out there with extra juice on the Canes tonight. How do you view this game? What I said earlier was, I mean, at some point, the Ole Miss lack of coaching, like two more coaches gone now, kind of has to matter, I think. I bet Miami. I'm curious where you lie on this.
Well, I thought it was going to matter in the Sugar Bowl, and it did not. For the first time in, 75 consecutive games, Kirby Smart lost a game when having the lead going into the fourth quarter. But we're not here to do an autopsy on some decisions in the fourth quarter. We're looking at the game tonight. I'll be honest. I don't have a bet on the side right now. I would lean towards Ole Miss. I actually do think it's a decent live betting game. A little hint, hint, Beast in primetime. We'll be on the air watching it. But, you know, for me, Gil, what I'm most curious about is the total and more specifically the first half. And I know first half unders have kind of been the craze this postseason, 27 and 16 by my count to the under. But I think what you're going to see in this game, especially in the first half, is a team in Miami that is incredibly slow, wants to be methodical. I believe my guy Brett Cianci over at Pick Six Previews has them as the fifth slowest pace of play amongst Power Four teams. That would be Miami. And then you have Ole Miss. They want to go, 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 right? They're up tempo. They want to run plays quickly. So I think you're going to get this kind of tug of war from a pace standpoint. So you're looking at what, 25 and a half out there in the betting market from a first half standpoint. So I did bet some under first half. I think I got 26 and a half. You know, look around. You might get this number to go up because the total is rising a little bit. Why I wouldn't play full game is what we saw, Gil, in the Sugar Bowl. This thing could get wild in the second half. And is there going to come a point in time where Miami has to abandon their script and maybe play a little bit more up tempo, maybe be a little bit more aggressive, because they have not had to be aggressive. And I think to the, you know, that's to the positive of Carson Beck. Don't make Carson Beck make risky throws. A lot of his throws have been shorter. They're leaning on Mark Fletcher. I expect Mark Fletcher to have a pretty big game here. So my main bet is first half under, but I did take a little dabble. And this one, I'm just going to laugh when I'm watching the game. I took Carson Beck over 5.5 rushing yards.
Nice.
This is an Ole Miss team that does not get to the quarterback very well. This is a Miami offensive line that is elite. Now, Carson Beck, not the most fleet of foot gentleman in the world, but you saw him extend some drives against Ohio State. And I always love in these big time games. Last year, we saw Will Howard run for a season high in the national championship against Notre Dame. So can Carson Beck extend a couple of drives with his feet and get us over 5.5? And as many of you know, the worry about rushing props in college when it comes to quarterbacks, sacks do count against your rushing number. So I do have a small play on over 5.5 rushing yards for Carson Beck.
Carson Beck, who made all the plays he needed to in third down situations, mm-hmm. When we last saw him in the quarterfinals, including, by the way, one run, I believe, for 11 yards, which would have got you over just on that play alone. So you just need one of those. We won't be able to talk to you before tomorrow night. Indiana and Oregon with the Hoosiers, a 3.5-point favorite against the Ducks in the rematch, if you will, of the game earlier this year in Eugene. How do you see this?
Yeah, I think that's the fun part about looking at what we saw back in October and how do we carry that over to what we'll see tomorrow night down in Atlanta. So you think back to the game in October, Oregon closes 6.5, 7-point favorites, and Indiana goes out there and wins the game 30-20. And if you go back and you rewatch the game, or you look at some of the advanced numbers from a guy like Bill Conley over at SP Plus, the adjusted point spread was about 16 points in this game. Indiana dominated Oregon. There was a pick six in there that kind of skewed things in the fourth quarter, and Indiana ultimately went right back down the field. Now, when you look at the injuries now for Oregon, Davison is out. That's their, you know, power back. So that's a big loss there for the Oregon Ducks. So that is certainly a concern for me when I look at, you know, a guy like Jordan Davison, who just had two touchdown runs in the Orange Bowl. I jumped in on the under in this one, you know, not feeling as confident, I guess, as the market is pushing back now up to 48.5. When I look at this game, guys, I fully think it's just going to be an absolute war. I don't know if Hagler-Hearns is the right comparison, where they're going to be in the middle of the ring just swinging at each other. But I think the defense of both of these teams, the physicality of both of these teams are going to be on display. You know, I'll compare it to last year's Orange Bowl. I went to Notre Dame, Penn State. It was a low scoring first half. And then the second half kind of got a little crazy. And that's always a concern too, right? Where in the fourth quarter, a little bit of desperation, you know, a la Ravens Steelers on Sunday Night Football. So I split my unit, guys, in this one. Took first half under 23.5, full game under 47.5. Obviously, you can get a better number now. Lean a little bit towards Oregon plus the points. Haven't gotten there yet. Was going to wait and see how this one ultimately goes. Does the money come in behind Indiana? Do we get a four? Do we get back to that 4.5 we were? But right now, what I'm heading into this game, guys, is a split unit play, first half, full game under Oregon and Indiana.
One word answer, yes or no. Ridiculous to think this might have something to do with who ends up as the number one pick in the draft also, between Moore and Mendoza, based on
it's performance? It's ridiculous, yes, but I think it will affect the betting market.
Okay, there it is. I agree with that assessment. Ridiculous to think one game would, but yes, the betting market could get affected. Thank you, Tim.
See ya.